This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends and grievers and bereavers and grief curious and otherwise cool people. It's your boy, Michael Cruz Kane, and you are listening to another episode of A Good Cry, a podcast about grief that is also nice. Can you even believe it? Thanks for listening. Thanks for emailing me. A bunch of you have been emailing and DMing me, and I really appreciate those messages. I try to respond to everything as soon as I can. I just got an email that I'm responding to now from Hannah. Hannah, I'm going to hit you back right now. And that email again is agoodcry@theradiopoint.com. Again, agoodcry@theradiopoint.com. Or you can DM me, find me on the internet, and send me messages that way. And also, if you have questions that you want me to ask guests or topics you want me to discuss, let me know, and I will try to ask those questions or discuss those topics. Okay, grief thoughts. This episode is being released on the anniversary of my son Fisher's death. We try and make that a special day every year. Last year, we bought a bunch of food at a supermarket and donated it to a community fridge. And every year, we try and do something, donate toys, whatever, something to keep Fisher's memory alive. We've done other things in the past, but the universe really tries hard to erase them. We planted a tree in his honor, and the neighborhood kids killed the tree. I wrote his name on the back of the wall at the UCB theater, and then the UCB moved theaters. And then I wrote on the back of the wall of that theater, and the UCB shut down in New York City completely. But now I've got this podcast, and you can't stop me from making more episodes. I dare you to try. We have a lot of memories of Fisher, and we also have his ashes, and we have some of the stuff that was with him in the isolette when he was in the NICU, and we have the imprint of his hand and feet, and we have some photographs, and we also have the love and the pain that comes with remembering him, and we also have his twin brother, which is really the best memory of him we could possibly have, because he is very much, I'm sure, what Fisher would be like, even though Fisher obviously would have been his own person. So that's a tremendous gift to us, and we feel lucky for it. I mean, incredibly lucky. Sad as fuck, but lucky too. This episode is Chris Kelly. He is a writer and director and brilliant, talented, lovely man who lost his mother several years ago. He blogged about her on Tumblr. Do we remember Tumblr? And also, stepping up his game big time, made a movie about the experience of losing his mother called Other People that you have to watch. It is so good. And if you're interested in grief and realistic depictions of it, it's, I mean, without parallel, at least in movies that I've seen on this, that subject. It's called Other People, Molly Shannon, Bradley Whitford, Jesse Plemons. Even the people in the movie who have tiny, tiny roles, if you see where their careers have gone, they've become incredibly successful people. And that's just a testament to Chris and the kind of culture that he cultivates and how much people love him. There's so much in this episode that I really love, but I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm only going to say that this is one of my favorite episodes of this podcast that I've done. And also, I love you, Fisher, forever and ever. Think about you all the time, man. This is episode 8 of A Good Cry. Thanks for listening. I hope it helps. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of A Good Cry. My guest today is the lovely, dare I say handsome, dare I say magnetic, Chris Kelly. Hi, Chris. How are you?
My God. Hello.
What did you ask me? I heard Handsome and Magnetic, and I'm like, great, I love this podcast.
Yeah, I don't usually begin with flirtation. It just kind of happened accidentally. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Our kickoff question is always, what is your relationship to grief? For the people who don't know, would you mind telling us?
No, Lord. What's my relationship to grief? That's just like, who's died?
I mean, that's definitely part of it. Yeah, for sure.
What's my relationship to grief? I guess it's on a low simmer at maybe a 3% every day.
Okay.
My 3-7% all day. But for even when you're like, why? And I'm like, I don't know. I just probably it's at 3-7% all day.
That seems like a manageable percentage.
No, I don't know. The obvious answer to probably say is my mother died, but it's been so long that it feels, yeah, my mom died 12 years ago. So my obvious answer relationship to grief is my mother died 12 years ago when I was younger, and I wrote and directed a movie about it. So I sort of like took grief and ran with it. I'm trying to think.
I'm going to use your moment of thinking just to hardcore plug the movie Other People, which I was rewatching prior to this interview, and it is so good. I mean, wow. Not only is it so good, but also the cast is crazy.
The cast is crazy, yeah.
The people on the improv team, which is like, you know, a very small part of your movie. And you're like, oh my gosh, the people who play this, like even the people who play the smallest roles in this movie have become deservedly incredible, like stars in their own right. And obviously that's not the point of the plug. The movie is brilliant. I mean, I love it. It's very funny. It's very sad. And it's beautiful.
That's nice. Thank you. I mean, yeah, so many of all of our mutual friends are in it. So it's yeah, it was very lucky. I mean, mostly cast comedy people and people from UCB and people that I knew. So, but it is fun to like look back at the cast and be like, oh, holy shit, everyone's doing well now. Everyone is working and has, you know, been making cool stuff since the movie. But yeah, that's my first obvious answer. My relationship to grief is the death of my mother is probably the closest person that's died. It feels so weird to talk about now, but I don't know, like it was so recent and then all of a sudden it was so long ago. You know what I mean? Like I lived in the immediate grief of my mother dying for so long where it would be like, oh, she died earlier this year or she died a couple years ago. Now it's like, oh, she died 12 years ago. It almost feels silly to be talking about it, but then not silly. You know, it feels like it's whole other lifetime ago.
Yeah. Do you ever, like, how do you talk about it ever? I mean, I know you made a movie, which is a lot more than, you know, 99.9% of people ever would have the means or ability to do. Since then, or in the recent past, do you talk about your mom that much?
Yeah, I don't not talk about it, but definitely I feel like getting able to make that movie, I felt like I got to say a lot of the things I wanted to say about it. And I got to really live in the grief and work through some shit. And it was like a very sad, hard, but sort of lovely, beautiful thing to get to do, to sort of tell the story about my mother. And not just, the movie isn't just about her dying, but it's sort of just about the year of being with her while she was sick. And it's about her even when she wasn't just a dying woman. It was about who she was in general. And so the whole experience was very lovely and cathartic. So it's not like I finished the movie and I'm like, and I'm done dealing with it and I'm done talking about it.
Bye.
But bye, mommy. But no, on a day-to-day basis, I don't really talk about it as much. But obviously when I see my sisters, we'll reminisce about our mom or, you know, whenever you meet someone who has experienced grief, you know, in their life, that tends to be something that you're almost excited to bond over because it's someone who's kind of walked the same halls as you. You know, even if it's not the exact same experience, there is sort of a recognition with another person, you know?
Yeah, there's like a community there, which is, you know, part of what the mission of this podcast is. But there is like a community there that at least for me, I didn't know existed until tragedy struck. That it's like, oh, I didn't realize that there's this second tier of being that I had, you know, no awareness of until something awful happened to me.
Yeah.
Your mom had cancer, is that right?
She did have cancer, yeah.
And can you tell us about what the process, as far as you remember, like what that was like, her diagnosis and everything?
So she died when I was 26, I think. And she got cancer maybe a couple of years before, prior to that. And it was the whole thing where it like went away and she was in remission and she didn't have cancer anymore. And then it was sort of like, you know, every 6 months just go and get a checkup and just make sure it hasn't come back. And she did that a couple times and it was always like, good to go, good to go, good to go. And then one time it was like, oh, actually it's very, very, very back all over. Like it just kind of went from 0 to 60.
Oh, wow. How often were those checkups? Do you know, do you remember how far apart they
were? I think it was like every 6 months, but it wasn't like the cancer was gone for 20 years and then suddenly it came back. She was very young when she died. She was 49. So it was a very quick process overall. But yeah, I was living in New York and I don't know, like I kind of, this is a little bit what my movie's about in general, but I had never really experienced grief or someone super sick to me that close. I had an uncle when I was in college who I became close to because I went to school at UC Irvine. So I lived in Southern California and a lot of my extended family, aunts and uncles, also lived in Southern California. And while I lived down there, he got diagnosed with ALS like when he was 30. And died around 35. So for a lot of my college life, he was succumbing to ALS and it was, you know, all the things we know about ALS, it was brutal and sad. And so that was my first experience like with death and like seeing a body deteriorate and seeing what that does to a family. But then my mom was obviously the like closest. So I'd never really experienced it a ton. So a lot of my relationship to grief or sickness or dying or death was the movies, you know? So every time something would happen in my real life, I'd be like, God, I like that movie. Oh, interesting.
Right.
You know, the doctor comes out and gives the news and you're like, just like I've seen, you know, I felt very outside of myself. I felt very like, oh shit, this really happens. Like,
yes, totally.
The scene in the hospital, that's why they have those scenes in movies is because the nurse does come do this. You know?
Yeah. It's like, it's a page from a movie about someone else's life. And suddenly you're like, oh, this is,
yeah.
Am I in this movie right now?
Yeah. Holy shit. Oh, am I doing a good job? So, yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I think it was sort of like she had cancer and it was going to go away. It was a very, very rare type of cancer. And then all of a sudden it was sort of back with a vengeance. And we kind of had maybe a year-ish where it was sort of like, in the moment, the doctors are very like, they don't want to say she's going to die. And I don't think they ever can say that. But in retrospect, the way they talked, it was so clear. It was kind of a death sentence, but it was sort of like, you never know, and we're going to try. And she was on chemo and radiation, and we did all the things you're supposed to do. But in retrospect, I could tell it was sort of like, that's what they got to say. And it was a little bit of a pageant. But
yeah,
I think it was a very rare cancer, and she didn't quite stand a chance. So that lasted about a year from when it came back to when she died, I think. But that's also like, I made a movie about it, and I said it over the course of a year. So that could not be true. That's a tangent of something I've struggled with, was like writing a version of something that happened. And now 5 years out from the movie, 12 years out from the real thing, sometimes I struggle with what actually happened or what I said happened, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about that a lot. The idea, like when I tell the story of Fisher's death, frequently telling it incorrectly. And anytime somebody else was there, they're like, no, it didn't happen that way. Or like that.
Yeah.
You're wrong about this part. And I'm like, wait, how could I? Because in my mind, the memory is like calcified of like this.
Yeah.
This happened exactly this way. And then someone else is there who's like, every detail of that thing you remember that you are for sure, like that you are positive about is totally wrong. And I'm like, shit, that's crazy. I guess it's not that crazy because it's like you're emotionally bombarded in a way you have never been. So your brain is probably just catching whatever it can.
Yeah.
But it's not surprising to me that you would be like, yeah, maybe parts of this aren't exactly right.
I know, but it makes me sad. Does that make you sad when that happens? Or do you not think about it that much? Where I'm like, I don't even know that I'm doing it. Or you're like, oh, wait, what? Like sometimes when I talk to my sisters and they give me a memory, I'll instantly be like, oh yes, that is what happened. The version I've been remembering isn't true. And it makes me sad, but I guess that's how storytelling works. Like you don't even realize you're changing it accidentally every time you tell it. Or
yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, as people who are like part of our identity is being funny, there's also probably an element for me of retelling the story.
Yeah.
And wherever somebody laughs, I'm like, that part's true.
Right. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That must be true. That to me is true.
Yeah. I definitely have done that.
But it's also probably, I bet that I could see it being different for you in terms of it making you sad because your mother had like a full, like not a full life, but she had a life, like an adult life mm-hmm. where it's like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like, I don't necessarily want to change her story. Whereas my son was alive for 34 days. So like, I don't feel like, it's not like he's going to be like, Dad, that's not, you know what I mean? Like, no, that's not what happened. It's like, well, he was in the hospital the entire time. It's not like, I'm mistelling one of the anecdotes. You know what I mean?
I totally get that. I think it also is just tough because especially with you, you had such a limited time with him that what you have are your memories. And then you want to be able to trust that they're true. And then if someone's like, that didn't happen, you're like, well, what the fuck? You know, like, because the memories are valuable. So I feel that way with my mom where I sometimes struggle to, this is so cheesy. I'm like in my brain, I'm stopping myself from saying it, but this is so cheesy. I was just writing something else with my writing partner, Sarah, and I was like imitating a mom character and I was talking as a mom. And as I was doing it, I started to channel my own mom. Like I started to hear her in my ears. As I was improvising, I was like, oh, I hear my mom. And it was the first time I could like clearly hear her voice in years. Cause I just, even the 12 years since she died, sometimes I'm like, her voice, try to think of her voice, try to remember specifically the sound of her voice. And I can kind of do it, but not perfectly. Or sometimes if I watch a home video now, I'm like, oh yeah, that's what she sounded like. Because it wasn't, you know, hundreds of years ago, but it still wasn't like, we don't have a lot of iPhone videos of her. There wasn't a lot of, you know, it wasn't like now there's just thousands and thousands of videos of her. The videos of my mom are like true home video camera videos. So they're rarer. So to like hear her voice is, you have to go searching. I don't know. So I just thought of that like last week I was kind of improvising as her for this thing, trying to like come up with like lines for a mom. And I could hear her so clearly and it was like fun to be reminded of what she sounded like.
Yeah.
But those details of what they sound like or look like or exactly what happened on that day, I get frustrated if I'm like, I messed it up or I've combined two things or I've changed it because like you said, I got a laugh. And so I changed it to follow the laugh. But
yeah. Why do you think that bothers you?
I think it's because what I have left are memories, you know what I mean? And so it's like, I don't want to lose that. I don't know. Or I feel like it's what you're saying. It's like, I feel like she had a full life and I have to do her justice. You know what I mean? Or I don't want her to become like my funny anecdote. She was a full person, you know?
Yeah, that part, I totally get that part of it. Where it's, I mean,
yeah.
I have this podcast, which is like, you know, ostensibly in many ways about my son. I'm working on like a one-man thing about him. And it's very much like, am I cheapening this? Like, am I doing this for the right reason? And there is that like, the instinct to follow the laugh is not always in lockstep with respecting the memory that's the most important part of the story.
Yeah.
There's a line there where you're like, I don't ever want to accidentally cross this into lying basically to make it funny.
Well, that's so interesting because I was just saying I had those worries, but then hearing you say that you're working on a show about your son, and this is largely why you started this podcast in memory of your son, and you have those same worries. Instantly hearing that, I'm like, oh, you shouldn't worry about that. That is not how that comes across, and I wouldn't worry about that at all. So, you know what I mean? So I'm like that, you know, so I think you're okay.
Your generosity with me is reflected back onto you, I hope.
Yeah. But it's sort of like there are things that can be, what is that saying? Where it can be real, even if it's not true, or true, even if it's not real. Like if, you know, I struggled that with making the movie is I did change some things because you still got to like tell a story, baby. And so not every single thing happened, but it's still in service of hopefully capturing a larger truth about a person. You know what I mean? So if like this scene didn't happen, this line wasn't said, that's not like a disservice to my mother or I'm telling a lie about this dead woman, but it's...
Right, like Bradley Whitford's not your real dad in real life.
No, that part is true. That part is true.
Bradley Whitford is your dad.
Yeah. yeah, but talking about someone who's passed or talking about anything from a long time ago and storytelling and choosing to write a 1 hour about, you know, your son or choosing to write a movie about my mom. Yeah. It is a bizarre experience because it inherently twists and turns and changes what happened and, amplifies some things. You forget other things. Yeah. It's a bizarre experience.
Did you, when you were making the movie or when you set out to make the movie, what, was your purpose clear to you? Was it like, this is something I need to do? Because like for me with my son, it's like, now I'm like, have creative output all the time. I'm writing whatever it is. But there is a part of me that's like, if I don't say this, I'm going to feel like I have something that I want to say that I haven't said.
Can I ask the obvious of remembering your son, and that was such an important, awful moment in your life, but yeah. Was there one specific thing you wanted to say? Was it just talking about your son, or was there a specific like thing you felt like you had?
I think for me, the thing, and it's also sort of the impetus behind these conversations, is that I want people to know that it's happening to everyone. Like not
constantly. Yeah. Just like as you're driving. Yeah.
Yeah. That you
look to your left, look to your right.
Look to your left, look to your right. All of you will be dead. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And somebody else will grieve that. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, by and large, like that, but also that you'll be at a restaurant and it's the worst day of your life and the table next to you is laughing their faces off and you want to be like, can you stop laughing for a second? But if you could teleport into their conversation, they're telling a story about their dead mom. You know what I mean? That like, it's happening every place around you, but because nobody talks about it when it happens to you, you're like, this is just me. It's only me.
Yeah.
Like that idea in your movie about like, oh, this happens to other people is... that's really true. But we're all the other people, you know?
Yeah.
That's the core of the idea.
Yeah. There's just so much about people that you don't know because you just don't know. I remember when Darcy first told me about your son, and it's interesting that you like, yeah, you're right. Everybody has a thing, or if they're lucky, a thing, if not multiple things that they've gone through in their life or people that they've lost or.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when my mom died feeling so outside of the world, just being like, this is so bizarre that it's still happening and all these people are still living their lives. And here I am just absolutely outside of the world. It's bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, I just identify with that so strongly. Just the idea that, that everyone's just still doing their stuff, that you're like, this tragedy has happened to me. Mm-hmm. And yet you are playing Nintendo Switch. Like, how could you do that now?
Yeah. How could you? But yeah, I don't know that. I'm trying to think of what the impetus was for the movie. I think it was probably a combination of personal and then like just as a writer, strategic, not strategic, but like I wanted to write a movie, and it's kind of the old adage of like, write what you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite know how to write a movie, and I'd never written something that long. And so it felt like I should write something close to the vest and something that was personal to me. And I thought a lot about that year I spent with my mom. I didn't like move back for one full year like the character does in the movie, but I'd kind of been going back and forth between New York and Sacramento for the larger part of the year. And then I moved back for a couple months right before she died. And I'd just been thinking about a lot of like the themes, or like I was thinking less of, I wanted to write a movie less about like mom dies and more about the things I thought about as she was dying. And so I don't know, as I was thinking that I wanted to write a movie, just those were the things that were kind of circling in my mind a bunch. And then it just kind of made sense. Yeah, I don't know.
Did it feel good? Like, did making the movie feel like, are you happy with it? It's amazing, but I know many people who are.
Do you like it? Do you like what it is?
Well, I know many people who are artists who have made amazing things, but still look back at it and go, you know, I look at it and I'm still like, I wish I could have X, Y, Z, or I feel like I didn't express this one thought clearly, or maybe you don't think about it. It was a while ago.
No, I don't know. I haven't watched it recently. So I'm sure that if I watched it now, or if I watch it in 10 or 20 years, I'll, you know, do the thing where you make anything at a certain point in your life, and then you hopefully get better, or have a different taste or a different aesthetic, or you learn, you know.
Sure, sure, sure.
I had truly never directed anything in my entire life before. That was the first thing I'd ever directed. So absolutely, there were large parts of me that didn't know what the fuck I was doing. So I'm sure I like could have made it a little more sophisticatedly, or, you know, I'm sure there were just technical things I could do better now. But I haven't watched it. I am proud of it in that I had no expectations for it. I wrote it to have written a feature, and I wanted this as like a sample, or if someone ever says, have you? So the fact that I was able to actually make it and it existed, I am proud of. So it kind of, like, I don't think it was some big hit, some big like Marvel movie hit, you know? But it did exceed my expectations in that it like got made. And I, like you said, the cast was incredible and I got to make it with such amazing people. And I mostly just really liked the experience of it. Like it felt very cheesily cathartic, more than I thought it would. Like I liked writing it and I'm proud of the script, but then the experience of making it, I think I just like worked with good people on it, you know, like Molly Shannon played my mom.
Incredible.
And she was such a good actor, but also was very empathetic and understanding about the role she was stepping into. You know what I mean? I think she knew like, okay, this kid wrote this movie about his dead mom. So this means something more to him than just being like signing on to play a role. So she went out of her way to, more so than she probably needed to be like, I want to meet your sisters and I want them to come over for dinner. And I want to call your mom's friends and get to know them and learn about your mom more. And,
oh my God. That's so lovely.
Yeah. She's very just, she isn't like my mom in a lot of ways, but there's enough overlap. There's a warmth there, like a generosity of spirit, a sense of humor that is similar. So to this day, I mean, she's in my TV show that I write right now. She's also in that. So we still work together and she's become just an actual, like real good life friend of mine. But she and Jesse Plemons and Bradley Whitford and Madison Beatty and Maude Apatow, I mean, all the cast was they were just good people. They were like nice and they were lovely. And they all agreed to be in a movie of somebody who'd never made a movie before, which is like a big deal. You know what I mean? That is a big deal. Like Jesse Plemons being like, I'll be in this Who's movie. Like the fact that he said yes is astonishing to me. So I don't know. They were all just very good and very careful and sensitive about the experience. Because I tried to be a real professional, but I would call cut sometimes and I would be like, okay, cut. Like, it was very bizarre to be like, okay, now do the scene where like, my mommy and me talk. It's so fucking stupid. It was so surreal. It was a very it was a very emotional experience and they were very lovely about it because sometimes I kept it together and sometimes it was hard. Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine that. I'm sure people watching the movie felt some level of that same feeling watching it. Just it's a very emotional movie. Mm-hmm. It's successful in that way.
Yeah. So
Were there a lot of people? I mean, you also you kept a Tumblr back when people had Tumblrs. Do people still have Tumblrs? I don't know. I think they do. Maybe.
Oh my God! Mentioning the fact that I used to have a Tumblr is what's going to make me cry. Not the content, just bringing up a Tumblr, a blog spot.
But you also wrote about your mom on Tumblr, right? You had a year long project there as well.
Yeah, it was. I remember. God, this is so like. Just like how young I was, how young we all were.
No, it's great.
Yeah, when my mom was sick, I kept a little Tumblr and I just wrote like a joke about her every day. Not a joke about her. Yeah, I really handed it to her one time a day. No,
really roasted her.
It was either just like a funny thing she said. She was so funny. It was like either just like a funny observation or just like some dumb little thing that made me laugh or memory, kind of as a writing exercise, kind of as a way to like focus on the positive. And I just would write one thing every day while I was at home with her. And then the movie isn't like based on the hit Tumblr, but when I, that's so funny. That should have been on the poster.
That probably was on some movie was made with that. That I'm sure Tumblr's got turned into.
I wish it had been like Jesse Plemons. So this movie is an adaptation of a Tumblr. Will you do it? It was just random nothingness that I didn't think too much about. But then when I went to go write the movie, I did look back at the Tumblr. Like I looked back at it to be like, what happened that year? Or when I was looking to write the movie, I wanted to make sure it wasn't just like 1 year of like, here's a woman that dies and it's sad. I wanted like nuance and I wanted the movie to be funny and I wanted it to have specifics and things that felt that made the whole thing feel like a little richer. And so I looked back at that website to remind myself of patterns or jokes or things that like little things that you forget about that then make a script better.
Yeah. I mean, as a real stalker prior to this, before I watched your movie, I went back to the Tumblr and there's
Oh, shit. Recently?
This morning.
Is it still up?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to get that down.
No, don't take it down now. Now you can't take it down. I shouldn't have brought it up. It's so good. I won't say the name of it. That way it'll be hard for them to find. I don't know.
It really feels like an eighth grade girl's diary that I just have like up on the internet.
No, it is so, Chris, it is so great. And there's a feature on it where you can just click random. It'll just take you to random posts.
Oh boy.
And I got to tell you, every one of them, a winner. I feel like are you taking it down right now? Are you right now on Tumblr?
No, my hands are up. You can see my hands.
On Tumblr, trying to figure out how to deactivate. It's just really lovely. And that those seem like coping mechanisms in a way, I would imagine, to like try and or help you process. Maybe not even like to handle how heavy the emotion is, but just as like as a way to talk it through to yourself.
Yeah.
To keep the blog, I mean to make the movie. Mm-hmm. Were there other things you did when your mom was dying or after she died that to help you, like, I don't know, did you go to therapy? Like, were there other things you did that to help you process it?
I didn't go to therapy right after. I remember my stepdad and my two sisters, and I think my stepdad said, would be going to therapy something you guys would want? And one of my sisters right away said yes. And I was surprised by that. And so we all went to family therapy, but we only went one time from my memory. But so I don't remember what the goal of that, or like, why did we only go one time? That feels sad. And I had a really hard time, I remember, because I felt similarly to like the whole experience felt like a movie. I remember being like, whoa, this is like a therapy scene in a movie. So therapy wasn't a big one. I'm trying to think what else I did to cope. The first thing that comes to mind that is not real and it's not a good example, but it really is the first thing that came to mind. So that's something, is I went on a date with someone literally like maybe the day before I moved to Sacramento for like 6 months to be with my mom. And the date was absolutely average by all accounts. Like if you had been there as like a juror or a judge, you would have been like, the results of this date are they will not see each other again. But I think it was mostly me. Like I think in a normal world situation, I was more into him than he was into me.
Yeah.
But I don't think I was like over the moon for him. I just think he was like cute and nice and sure. But I think I didn't even realize it at the time, that I knew I was walking into such like a hell 6 months of sadness, and I was going to be outside of my life and not be around friends, and I was going to feel lonely. And I was like, I've never seen a body die. What's that going to be like? So I was just decided that that day was like a hit and tried to keep in touch with him. And so like, I would call him a lot and text him a lot and like keep him up to date on like my mom. And it got to a point like a month or two in where he had to very politely be like, you are so great. I'm so sorry for what you're going through. We like truly went on one date. This is not what you think this is. But I was truly trying to be like, you're my boyfriend. You're my rock. You're my heart back home. Like I can get through this because I have whatever your name is by my side. And I do remember just really for the first 2 months being like, well, at least I've got my life back in New York. And then being like, no, I don't. So I don't know if that's quite the answer to your question, but it was definitely a pathological thing. A coping mechanism I tried to have.
I bet there is a not insignificant number of relationships that last much longer because something bad happens to one of the people. And then you're like, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, I'll break up with him on Valentine's Day. Oh, shit, his cat died. Now we have to stay together at least until he gets over the cat thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just like, they just keep piling up.
Yeah. Oh, man. I haven't even thought about that guy in a long time. But as soon as you asked, it opened the door and I saw him again. I don't have his name, but I saw him.
Whatever happened to that George Clooney?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So you made the movie. That was 5 years ago, the movie. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It feels so long ago.
I know.
I guess we're older than I think we are.
We're old, yeah.
And then You said that your grief is at a 3 to 7% was what you said off the top of your head at the very beginning. We're taking that. That's entered into evidence as a fact.
Okay.
Are there things that happen in your daily life, or not in daily life necessarily, but anytime that you're like, oh, this makes me think of my mom?
I mean, obviously if I'm with my sisters, it's magnified because they look like her, sound like her. You know what I mean? They kind of unlock little moments where you're just talking and you're like, oh yeah, that whole event happened. I forgot about because it's not in my story I tell, and my story I tell is becoming calcified. So I forgot that there was this other event.
Yes.
It doesn't serve the narrative flow of the story I tell. I'm trying to think things that just remind me of my mom. I mean, my sisters are such a big one.
Yeah. Do you see your sisters often?
Yeah, I try to. One of them lives in San Francisco and one lives in Minnesota. So going back to Minnesota is a big one. That's where my mom's from. And so anything like lake related or being on the lake or being in the woods or Minnesota reminds me of my mom.
She would just like a sit out by the lake, that kind of vibe?
Yeah, sort of.
Or are we getting in a boat? Are we getting in a boat?
I'm getting in a boat. Sometimes we're getting in a boat.
Wow.
I don't need to get in a boat to think of my mom. I can be before the boat. I'm already thinking of her. But it's so weird because there's a story in my movie that one of the characters says, that John Early's character says about, which is a true thing that happened to me, which was, when someone that you love is dying or has died, everyone comes up to you and says like, she's in a better place, or, you know, says all these things to try to, you know, make you feel better. And it doesn't always work. In the movie, the character, I'm going to tell this wrong, and I'm like, is this worth telling? The character says something along the lines of, John Early's character says that when his mom died, someone said, we're going to have to edit this out. I don't remember it. I don't remember my own movie.
The whole podcast is just going
to
be this.
It was like some reference to a birch tree. It was John Early's character says something about like, when my mom died, she made some joke about like, oh, when I die, I'm going to be a birch tree, because my mom loved birch trees. And she kind of said it off the cuff and said like, oh yeah, when I die, I'll be a birch tree. And John Early's character says she meant it as a joke. It was absolutely kind of like a parody of how people say like, when I die, I'm going to be a flower. She meant it as a joke. And John Early's character says, and I don't really believe that, she didn't really believe it, but the very fact that she said it makes me think of her every time I see a birch tree.
Yeah.
So that it did have the interesting, it was real, it became real, it did have the power of transference, even as a joke, because now every time he sees a birch tree, he thinks of his mom. And so now every time I see a birch tree, I think of my mom because of this thing I invented to tell the story. You know what I mean? So that is a weird thing that I think of my mom because of like 6 degrees of separation.
That's like a thing you imagine, you concocted out of whole cloth. That's not a real story.
Mm-hmm. Or it's like, it's a real story, but it's kind of like a bastardized version of the story, or like happened to somebody else, but I like took it and ran with it. And so really when I'm thinking of my mom, I'm thinking of myself. And isn't that actually beautiful? I love to think of myself and cry.
The John Early character in the movie, at this point in the podcast, by the way, you should just pause the podcast and watch the movie, because we're going to be talking about it a lot. Come back to the pod. The John Early character is like, it's someone who's been through a similar thing before, right? Who like helps you, kind of leads you through it a little bit, offers you some guidance.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have someone like that in your real life? Someone who had also lost their mother?
No, not some. He's based on a friend of mine, but they hadn't also lost their mother. So that's kind of invented. But what about you? Did you have someone? That's such a specific form of loss. Do you have anyone that?
We had nobody. I mean, we had tons of people who loved us and were there to be supportive, but nobody who, until Fisher died, no one who was like, well, because no one wants to say, like, no one wants to talk about their dead son when your son might die. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like bad juju, I think. Like, we've had friends who've had pregnancy scares, and I'm a little hesitant to be like, you know, when my son died, because it feels like you're making a prediction. You're being like, ah.
Yeah.
So, no. But after he died, we did have people who were like, tons of people who were like, oh yeah, I had a miscarriage, or we lost a twin, or so many, like many, many people, particularly miscarriage.
Yeah.
Who I never would have known about it, because they never talk about it, because it's not a thing people talk about.
Yeah.
It's like the most the saddest version of death, I think, for a lot of people is the loss of a child, because it like inverts the order in which people are supposed to die.
No, yeah. I mean, I know I shouldn't feel this way because everyone's lives are their own and everyone's losses are their own, but I really am like, mine's a fucking walk in the park. Like, mine actually sounds fun. And I'm like, you really, I mean, that's really like, that's what I mean, is it feels like losing a mother is sad and, you know, losing anyone is sad, but I also felt like I had a lot of good years with her. And I, like I said, I had, you know, I didn't know anybody close in my life who like had gone through something similar, but you know, people who've lost their parents, and that's even the fact that I said it's in movies and TV, I had touchstones for that experience. Like I knew in large part, like what to expect or what I could feel, or I could recognize things I was going through because I'd seen it. And your loss in particular feels very, like you're saying, very not talked about, or very like a rare to hear about in a way that would probably feel very, I'm not trying to like make you cry. Okay.
But if you're bullying me.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm not phrasing it well on the spot, but like I have.
No. I understand exactly what you mean.
That it's like in large ways, I felt lucky because I, it didn't happen in not the order.
My belief on that subject is that, which is you've already said, is that everybody's life is their own.
Right.
And I will say that my wife, who now works in pediatric intensive care, mm-hmm. sees things happen in the hospital and will come home and be like, oh, what happened to us is like, I don't feel is nothing compared to what's going on with these, you know, this story, this kid that I saw today has it, you know, worse than. And you, it's hard to like.
And you guys keep a ranking, right? You guys keep a spreadsheet of ranking in hers?
We do.
Where am I? I move up and down and you move up and down.
Yeah, exactly. It's constantly in flux. Yeah, we're pitching it to the E network. I think they're going to buy it. but it is like everybody's, you know, everybody's got their own thing. For us, also, he has a twin who survived. Mm-hmm. So it's also like, you know, among the child death stories, in a way, we're lucky there because like Fisher, who died, his brother is like, I can tell you exactly what he would have looked like mm-hmm. because he's right here. So, you know, in a way we were lucky. I mean, I do feel lucky in a lot of ways. Obviously, if I could choose, mm-hmm. I would have felt luckier if he had lived. Although, honestly, I don't know that I would have, because I wouldn't even have the thought of being lucky. I would have just gone about my dumb life being like, yeah, I have twins. the you know what I mean? Like never having had the tragedy, I wouldn't even have thought to consider it luck.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does.
Like the same way that you're like, you know, I felt lucky to have had my mother for this all this time. Mm-hmm. I think if she, I don't want to speak for you, but for a lot of people, if she had lived a completely normal life, you might not have that gratitude every waking moment.
I know. And I think it's natural also to compare losses and griefs, which is not healthy and shouldn't be done. But I do think about that even with my own sisters, where I think it's maybe just a natural thing to do when you experience something bad, is to try to find obviously the positive, because like otherwise the alternative is like suffocating, you know, is like too much to think about, because loss is awful.
Yeah.
But even just my little sister was 7 years younger than me. So to go through that, she was 17 when my mom started getting really sick. So finishing high school and going off to college. And she just, I think her life was more, I was very lucky in that I was in my mid to late 20s and I kind of knew who I was. I knew I wanted to do with my life. I had a good support system. And I think she was just like becoming a woman and starting her life and like really could have used a mom. So I think about that a lot too, where I'm like,
yeah,
it was a hard loss, but I got out a lot easier than she did, I think, because I was already a little more planted in my life and not starting a life, you know?
Yeah, sure.
But yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. You said something that made me think of a question, which is the idea of like looking for the positive parts of something that's so sad inherently. Mm-hmm. Were there good things, do you think, that came out of losing your mom? Like out of your grief, do you think there are things that are good?
Yeah, well, I didn't like her, so, you know. I mean, like you said, I obviously would prefer that it hadn't happened. But yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Even getting to make that movie was a good example. Not like, oh, I got a movie out of her, but like the experience of that, like the experience of that was fulfilling and allowed me to, like, I do have Molly Shannon in my life now as someone who is a maternal friend figure that I love and is in my life now. Like when I made the movie, a lot of my mom's friends and family, and like she was a school teacher, and a lot of her best friends and school teachers were in the movie. So there's like a scene when Jesse Plemons goes back with Molly Shannon to her classroom, and she's sitting around with all her other teachers, and some of them are actors like Retta, and then some of them are just my mom's real friends.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And in the there's choir scenes where they're singing at church in the choir. The choir members are my mom's friends. So it was this awful thing that happened, and I wish it hadn't. And so I don't mean to say like, but I got to make a movie out of it. But the communal experience of getting it to make it, and like I said, having such nice people play the roles and having my mom's friends and family get to be a part of it. And when we did the improv scene, my aunts and uncles and cousins were in the audience. It felt like it was a nice way for us all to come together and like celebrate her, which was nice.
Yeah.
So I feel like I kind of expanded my friend and family group out through losing her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, no, it's like not good that she died. I'm just trying to think of, it's like what you said. It's like you kind of realize how lucky you are. Or it made me closer to my sisters. It made me more aware of extended family. You know, if you don't have an immediate family, you like lose an immediate member of your family. I've become closer to aunts and uncles and grandparents, and I've learned to make more of a point of being close to people in my life, if that makes sense. Like I tend to be inward. I tend to be quiet. I tend to be an introvert. And so sometimes it takes work for me to kind of like reach out and to make sure that I'm doing the work to keep relationships up. And I think the death of my mom showed me how valuable that is. You know what I mean?
In what way? What do you mean? Why is that valuable? I agree with you.
I mean, because just family is important. Full families. Why? Maybe it's not. Well, because I do think family was important to her. And so I feel like being close to my sisters and being close to my family is a way to like honor her and remember her and do right by her. But also family's important. And I think the mother is like an obvious, like at least you always have your mom. You can always go home. You can always go home again. You can always have your mom. Your mom will always love you. And that's gone. And so that's this big gaping hole of like, oh God, shit. So, maybe 3 or 4 aunts can fill the hole of one mother, you know? I guess that's really, you know, but like, you have to kind of work harder for family, and you kind of have to, because you don't have that knee-jerk obvious person to go to or to run to or to, yeah.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Your mom was like a charismatic person. I could see her being like the center of gravity for a whole solar system of people.
Yeah, she sort of was, yeah. Yeah.
You were saying you put it as if part of being close to family, I'm sure you love, but also is like a way of honoring her.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you think about? Like people, I think when I talk about grief are often like, you're so brave, or like you're doing this, you know, I love the ways in which you honor your son. And there's a part of me that wishes I could live up to that more. Like I do try to honor him in terms of keeping his memory alive, but it's also like on a day-to-day basis, I'm still like not a great person. I don't like walk through the world and in every action be like, let this, you know, I'm not at the DMV waiting in line being like, let me do this in a way that honors my son. But I wonder, like, does that thought cross your mind frequently? The idea of like, this is what my mom would have wanted.
I know. I feel like if anything, I would do the opposite if I was you. I'd be in the DMV being like, my son died. I'm going ahead of you.
I'll be first in line. Thank you.
Did your son die? Yeah. Excuse me. Let's all see if anyone can beat this story. It says I'm G98, but my son died. I know. I feel like mother died 12 years ago. Doesn't get you, it get you as much these days.
Yeah, you're right. Can't cash that in anywhere.
Oh, God. What even was the question? I mean, I try to honor it. I guess so. I do feel a lot of pressure. Without getting too much into it, I also don't have a super close relationship with my dad. Neither of my sister's siblings do, just for other various reasons. And so I do feel like this absence of parents. You know what I mean? Like our mom's dead and we're not super close with our dad. And so I do feel like, uh-oh, I'm the oldest. You know? So I feel a little like I need to be the mom or the dad, and I try to organize, like, let's all see each other and like, let's do a 3-way call every weekend. And let's, when are we going to, what are we doing for Thanksgiving? Or yeah, trying to be there for my sisters in ways that I probably wouldn't have thought to be there for them if my mom was still alive. And then I also don't have like a beautiful, soft maternal energy. So it's not quite the right fit, you know? So it's like me, it's like square peg round hole where I'm like, hey guys, let's do a call. Let's, what are we doing for Thanksgiving? But I'm like in character as someone I think I'm supposed to be, but it's just not for me, but I feel like I'm supposed to, you know?
So wait, are you hosting the family things? Is everyone coming to your place?
I try. We switch off every year. So this year we're going to San Francisco,
okay.
But I try. It's weird. And it also can be exhausting. A thing I've struggled a little bit with is like, I do sometimes wish I had, like, I feel the missing of parents, which is like sad to now say as we're wrapping this up. But like, I don't like being the oldest. Like that is wearing on me a little bit. You know what I mean? Like I was always the oldest sibling, and for work, I'm in charge. Like I kind of run my own show. And so it's a lot of like being in charge at work. And then you're in your family life, you're the oldest and you're in charge and there's no one older than you. So that is a thing I still miss to this day of like a...
Yeah, it's like a weird... I'm also the oldest. There is like an accident of chronology that like, I guess because I was born first, when my parents need help with their computer, I'm the one who gets called. Like, it's just like there's certain responsibilities that fall to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if my parents weren't around, I mean, my siblings are self-sufficient, like adults. It's not like I need to breastfeed them or anything, but all that stuff would just sort of, without thinking, fall to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another question for you, Chris,
okay.
On this podcast is what have you learned from grief? Are there things from the death of your mother that you take with you that help you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord. Are there things I've learned from grief? I think it's just more of an awareness of the people around me, like we were talking about. You know what I mean? I think, like maybe empathy or maybe being a little gentler or kinder to the people around me. And I don't mean kinder by being like, before I was mean and now I'm nice, but like, yeah, just more of an awareness. Like there is something to the title of my own movie, which is Other People, which is the idea that this happens to other people, but which is sort of like a, yeah, no duh. You know what I mean? Where it's kind of like a, yeah, dude, like you're not the center of the universe. You're not the lead of the movie. Like, this happens every day in oftentimes more gruesome and awful ways. And it's happening to you. I don't know. I would like to think it helps me move through the world with a little more empathy or giving people a little bit more grace or patience or, but then as I'm saying this, I'm like, me, patient. I hope my boyfriend doesn't listen to this. I don't know. Isn't it that thing where you like learn your lesson and you really learn it for a day. And then the next day someone like pisses you off and you're absolutely as if you've never learned anything in your life. But then the next day you're on a walk with a coffee and you're like, I've learned it again. The lesson is back and I've learned it. And now someone's pissing me off. So no one close to me has ever died. You're a bitch. Like you wake up the next morning in a good mood and you learn it again.
Yes. I feel that deeply. The idea of like, you know, you have a moment outside where you're like, oh man, you know, the universe can be so cruel. Let me take some time to just like, you know, beatifically smile down on the rest of the world. And then something happens to me, like somebody cuts me off in traffic and I'm like, oh, later I'm going to yell at my kids for no reason. They're going to get yelled at. It has nothing to do with this.
That's so funny. Do you have, I mean, I'm sure you've given this answer 1,000 times since this is your podcast, but is there like an obvious answer for you that you think that you've like really learned?
I think, well, for me, and I think life events are like this for a lot of people, it just sort of reinforces my sense of the world as that this sounds bleak when I say it, but I don't mean it in a bleak way, but just like the universe doesn't really give a shit about you. It's not like,
I agree. Yeah.
Like the world, you know, this happens and people just keep going on with their lives. And again, every time I say that, I'm like, I don't mean that as like, this is so depressing. There's like also kind of a beauty and freedom to it.
I agree. I agree with that mindset. And I don't think it's bleak. I think that helps me too. And I agree the same way that the universe is random and that sometimes awful things happen. Sometimes great things happen. I'm not a big believer in everything happens for a reason. I think it's just, yeah, it's just like the body and science and we're animals and like things happen and some things work and some things don't and like crazy awful things happen. And I don't know. And it's helpful to be like, there's no, there's nothing we could have done or like, you know, I don't know.
I think it is like the you know, why did this happen to me, to him, is the, I mean, the only answer that satisfies me is no reason.
Yeah, no reason.
It just happened. And, you know, you were saying you don't believe everything happens for a reason. And here's like a thing a thought that I've been working on that maybe is really corny, but
okay,
is that things do happen for a reason if you make a reason for yourself, right? That's like,
yeah,
was there some divine purpose in the universe for my son, your mom, for everybody ever to die? Probably not. But if you take her death and make it into something, then that was, then the reason is that. Does that make sense?
I mean, that's literally the exact, well, that's such a version of this like birch tree thing I just said to you, where it's like the joke of being like, I'll be a birch tree when I die is like, now I see birch trees and I think of her.
Yeah.
And that is fake, but also what is fake and what is real? You know what I mean? It's like, it's as real as I want it to be, or as real as someone wants it to be, or as fake as someone wants it to be. We also just me and my boyfriend just watched all of The Leftovers again, and that's the entire—
Oh, The Leftovers is so good.
It's the entire premise of The Leftovers, right? Which is like anything that happens is either fully random, if you want it to believe it's random and there's no answer, or it's happened for a reason, or miracles exist, or no, there's a scientific explanation. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
I love The Leftovers. It's so good. You can pause the podcast.
And now watch all of The Leftovers and then come back.
And then come back to the last 6 minutes, maybe. But The Leftovers is a great transition to what may be the last question, which is, do you think of your mom as someplace now? Is there a place, like, do you address her ever? Do you think she's in heaven, or is she in a birch tree, or what?
Oh boy.
It's okay if the answer is a perfectly valid answer, BT Dubs, is I think of her as dead and not around, which I think is—
I think she is sitting at the right hand of the Father on a cloud. it's her, then Jesus. It's God, and then Jesus, God's son, and then my mother on a big, puffy, hard cloud. Also saying that so mockingly, but absolutely some people do believe that. So how dare I?
Yes, they do. And that's great.
I think of her as nowhere, but then everywhere, in that I do think of her often. And like I said, I see her in things, and I see her in my sisters, and I dream about her a lot. It comes in waves. Sometimes it'll be not at all, and then it will be like real spurts for like a few nights in a row I dream of her. So I don't picture her anywhere. Like, she is in heaven, or she is now, you know, the chipmunk running through my yard. But I don't think she's actually anywhere, but she's everywhere, in that a lot of things remind me of her. And she was meaningful to me. So she's in my brain and in my subconscious and in the way I move, the way my sisters move, the way they laugh, the way they talk, the way, you know, the way me and my sisters will spend time together, and then I'll have a dream about her. So like, that is all real and valid to me, but I don't believe she is like any one place, like she's on a cloud, you know? I don't know. That's my best answer.
Yeah. I mean, we were cat sitting for my sister, and the cat was like meowing just 250% of the time, making sounds that like, oh, cats don't make, like whatever sound this is, I've never heard a cat make it before. And there, I think of myself as a very rational person, but my mind does start to entertain things like, oh, my son is in this cat. You know what I mean? Where it's like, no, he's not. 100%, this cat is not your son.
Yeah.
But there are moments like where, if I'm exposed to something for long enough, I will start to be like, is my son in this cat? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
And you never know.
You never know.
I mean, that is honestly, not to talk about The Leftovers so much, but I think that is why that show is so incredible, is because the answer is, of course not. But also, who the fuck are you to say, what if he is? You know what I mean? Like, you don't really know.
Could be.
But like, obviously, probably not. But like, no one knows anything. So God bless, you know? But that is interesting. When my mom died, we buried her because she didn't want to be cremated, because she didn't want to be lit on fire, her quotes. So we buried her, but we buried her in Mill Valley, which is this like beautiful hill overlooking San Francisco. And it's not a traditional, she doesn't have a traditional plot, like with like a grave marking. It's just like a park, and they just put their body in the earth naturally. And so there's no marking. If you were to go, the whole idea is, we all agreed as a family, we don't need to like have a plot that we go visit, because we don't believe that our mom is there. Our mom is not there. That's just her body, and yada, yada. And so you can go visit. They kind of prefer that you don't, or if you do, you just like bring a nice lunch, eat there, but you don't need to know, like, this is where the body lays.
Right.
Though if you want, you can ask them and they can like Google search it, or they can find like on the map where the body is and like do a little marker. But when my mom died, me and my sisters and my dad were all like, well, we're never going to visit her. We don't really believe this is where she is. And I've still to this day feel that way. But my sisters go often. My sisters go pretty often. My sisters have been probably a dozen times. And when they go, they want to know where she is, and they want to like put the flag. And it's like sweet, because it is like, you don't like know what you're going to need. You know what I mean? And it's like that belief of like, I don't really think this is my mom here, but there is a comforting blanket to being like, yes, it is. She's right down there. I don't even know what I'm getting at, but it's like you never know what you're going to need, or you can laugh at the belief of like, she's not really there, or this place isn't meaningful to me. This is just her body. But like, you go 12 times, that's not nothing. You believe something, you know, it means something to you to have the,
yeah,
to have the repetition of being like, here's somewhere I can tangibly be like, you know, this is where she is.
Yeah. That's so beautiful to me, because it is like, even if intellectually you're like, this thing that I'm doing is meaningless, I know,
yeah,
that there is nothing, that she's not under the ground here waving at me, but it still is like, you, the third time you've done it, it's now, it has meaning. You have created a ritual, mm-hmm, that has a meaning. And that, doing that in spite of your intellectual self, is so beautiful to me.
Yeah, me too.
And that is like, you know, we were making jokes about the cloud or whatever, but that like the commitment to those kinds of things, even when it's like, mm-hmm, you have to know on some level this isn't right, is what, that's the attractiveness of those things to me.
Yeah, they're all versions of the same thing. You know what I mean? They're all gradations on the same instinct, which is wanting to believe or wanting to feel connected in some way to something else or to the people who died, or yeah, it's interesting to me.
Well, that's beautiful. Chris, what was your mom's name?
I forget. Right after that was beautiful. Joanne. Her name was Joanne, yeah.
Joanne.
Mm-hmm. Joanne.
I mean, I think the things you've created honor her so well. I really admire what you have done. I'm sure at least in part to honor your mom. It's really beautiful.
That's nice. Well, I feel the same way. I feel like the same way about this podcast, and I really want to see your show.
Thank you so much. I mean, there definitely is an element of like, if my son could like address me from the beyond, I wouldn't be at all offended if he was like, and you started a podcast is what you did? So mom became a nurse and you started a podcast. Do I have that right?
He's up in heaven and everyone's like, okay, your dad started a podcast about you. And they're like making fun of him in heaven. at recess in heaven is what I picture. He's at recess in heaven. They still have a school system.
They're all gathered around like, yeah, they've downloaded the podcast. And he's like, guys, do not listen to that. Please. Please, can we play tag? Okay, well, this was episode 8 of A Good Cry. My guest was Chris Kelly. Thank you for coming, Chris. You're great.
Thanks for having me.
And I hope it helps. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum, with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.